You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Forget what you think you know about the civil rights movement. Forget for just a moment the stories of Martin Luther King, Emmett Till, Medgar Evers, James Chaney, and Andrew Goodman. Forget those for just a second. And try to see the civil rights movement through a different lens. Try to see the civil rights movement through the eyes of the women.
I was not the only person who had been mistreated and humiliated. Others had gone through the same experience, some even worse experience than mine. And they all felt that the time had come that they should decide that we would have to stop supporting the bus company until we were given better service.
That's the voice of Rosa Parks speaking in 1956. She's talking about the moment that would lead to the mass boycotts of the bus system in Montgomery, Alabama. But that moment had a long history behind it, and the story of Rosa Parks as an activist actually began with the investigation of the sexual abuse of African-American women in the South. And that's the lens through which we want you to view the civil rights movement for today. Today we're speaking with Danya McGuire. She's the author of At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement from Rosa Parks to the Rise of Black Power. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning.
That's perhaps one of the longest titles of a book we've had on the show. She joins us from our member station WDET in Detroit. And also with us is Robert Corbett in Abbeville, Alabama. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Well, it's difficult to intro you without actually telling the story that begins Danielle's book. So, Danielle, if you could explain for us the story of Robert's sister and why you use this as the bookend to begin the civil rights movement in your history.
Sure. In September of 1944, Recy Taylor was walking home from church with a friend and her son. And as they walked home, they noticed a car pass by them a handful of times. There were a number of white men in the car hollering out to them, and the men got out of the car with guns and knives. They surrounded the women and told Recy Taylor that she had to come with them or else they would kill her. They drove away, they took her to the edge of town, and they brutally gang-raped her. That night she told her husband, her father, the sheriff, and her family what happened to her. A few days later, she got a call from the Montgomery NAACP. They said they'd send their very best investigator.
And that investigator was?
Rosa Parks. It was 1944, 11 years before the Montgomery bus boycott.
And Rosa Parks, in her job as secretary, actually took a number of these stories down. And Robert, I don't know if after all this time it's still difficult to hear that story of your sister, Recy Taylor.
Yes, it is.
I wonder, I mean, I don't want to, I'm not giving anything away. Her story is now for the history books.
Right.
But during the course of trying to get justice for your sister, she was called just about every name in the book. She was called a prostitute. She was called a tramp. She was smeared by the sheriff and the other men in the town. And in the end, she did not get justice. And I wonder what that was like for her. Did she need to get justice through the court system?
Yeah, she was very hurried. And as a matter of fact, she spent the last 66 years hurried over this thing. And thanks to Ms. McGuire that she brought the whole truth out in the book, because everything was so disorderly and so many lies told about it. So she really didn't get justice. She mostly spent her time worrying about it. She wouldn't talk about it. But I would talk to her about this thing, and she would start to cry right away, and I'd back away. But the book that Danielle wrote tells the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Mm-hmm. And and the first time the family really know the truth is when she wrote this book. And she gave us the full facts of what went on. We was sitting right here. Matter of fact, the people that raped her was like our neighbors. One was lived to the left for about 200 feet. one to the right about the length of a 3-football field, and the sheriff that investigated lived right in our yard, more or less. So we really never knew anything, what was going on. We knew what happened, but we didn't know the facts about the investigation until Danielle's book came out. And it's true from the beginning to the end.
You still live in the town where this happened to your sister. You still live in the town where your father would sit on the porch with a shotgun all night long waiting for the attack that he feared on his family because she had gone to the authorities. I mean, I can't imagine spending your life there. That's a kind of history that hurts.
We got many threats throughout the years, you know, threat after threat. He basically was in a tree behind the house. He guarded the house while we sleep. And, you know, knowing that we had Ku Klux Klans in the area, they would carry out these threats, because I did have a cousin that was killed by the Klans because he had an argument with a white man. That was pretty much in our mind, and that was in my father's mind, too. So that's the reason he guarded the house while the family slept.
So Danielle and Robert, sex played a role in the civil rights movement in a number of ways, not just the exploitation of black women, but also the abuse of black men, because violence against them was sometimes justified by unfounded claims that they'd raped a white woman.
That's right. It seems to be that sex is at the center of the freedom struggle from slavery through the present day. And we see the way whites projected their own crimes and deviant behaviors onto black men and women in order to maintain their own political and social and economic power. And so whenever African Americans asserted themselves as human beings or demanded any citizenship rights granted by the Constitution, white Southerners, basically from slavery through the better part of the 20th century, used these myths of black men as rapists and white fears of miscegenation to derail and destroy African-American freedom struggles. At the same time that they're doing that, they're also, in many ways, busy attacking black women. I mean, this was part of a large structure of white supremacy that maintained white power. It allowed them to control black women's bodies. It allowed them to control black men's bodies, and in many ways, to control white women as well.
There's often many studies on the use of rape as a tactic of war in that
right.
It demoralizes a population. And that appears to be what initially outrages enough people that Robert Corbett's sister, the case of Recy Taylor, becomes the first time that there's really a truly nationally coordinated movement to fight the status quo.
Yeah, you see that especially, I think, partly because of World War II. It gave the lie to this idea that the United States was the most democratic place on the planet. And it allowed African Americans to use the war as a political wedge to highlight the chasm between the reality of racism and the rhetoric of democracy. And there were earlier campaigns for title to black women's bodies by black women in the 19th century, you know, right after slavery. But throughout the early period of Jim Crow, I think those faded because it was so violent. And you don't see another major campaign, a national campaign, until World War II.
Robert Corbett, I have to wonder, I mean, clearly Danielle McGuire documents a number of cases in her book where women, African-American women, are assaulted on the streets, on their way home, in their workplaces, on the bus, even the buses that sparked the Montgomery boycott. And I'm wondering, for you, if the name Recy Taylor is now known, if people now are looking at the civil rights movement and that it began with the case of your sister, does that help you find some measure of peace?
Yes, it do. And I thought it was all swept under the rug, and I know our city head at the courthouse said, clean out everything about her there. You won't find anything about my sister in the records at the Henry County Courthouse here. And when Ms. McGuire, I found out that she was writing this book and so forth, that gave me a lot of relief. I thought that it was forgotten, but she brought it back alive here. And a lot of people, telling about this book, I want them to read it here in Abbeville, Alabama. And the families, the people that committed this rape, they all is dead now. Just their families is here, and we hold nothing against them because they weren't even born at this time. But we had a lot of hostility towards the guys that committed this rape back in those days, and it was a brutal rape.
She was beat up. Her clothes were torn. She was stumbling by the time she made it back into town. Do you feel, I mean, looking back, is your sense that we have come a long way since then, or no?
Yes, we have come a long way since then. For the simple reason that couldn't happen here in Alabama and Abbeville now and be covered up the way it was in 1944. We come a long ways here because we were, you know, you got more weapons to fight back with now than you did at that time. And Reese, you know, thank God for her. She was a brave woman. And she done all she could at that time.
Danielle, I have to ask you, you're kind of upending history's interpretation of the civil rights movement. Were you aware of that when you started researching this for this book?
Not at all. I was just following a little thread, and I had no idea where it would take me. I didn't know what the thesis would be. I just kept following this thread, and it took me all over the country, talking to lots of different people, to lots of different archives, and sort of slowly over 12 years, a larger story became apparent.
And the larger story that became apparent was the role, not just that women's bodies, not just that the male sexual subjugation, white male sexual subjugation of African-American women played in sparking the civil rights movement, in motivating the civil rights movement, but also the part that women played, like Rosa Parks, in actually achieving it through demanding respect for their own bodies.
Right. This isn't just a story about victimhood. This is a story about the courageous testimony of women like Recy Taylor and women like Rosa Parks, who put everything on the line in order to make their world and the world for their daughters a much better place.
And how differently did you view Rosa Parks, knowing that she had collected reports of brutal rapes, many of them gang rapes, beatings of African-American women, and yet still refused to give up her seat?
I think it changes the way we see her forever. You know, every time I heard the Rosa Parks story in school, I'd kind of roll my eyes like, okay, quiet seamstress, tired feet, we know the story. But this makes me have so much more respect for her to defy her gender and her racial roles in the 1940s and the 50s and continue really throughout the rest of her life as an activist for justice is astounding. And we don't give her enough credit. We diminish her in popular retellings of the civil rights movement, and we should lift her up, her full self.
Well, you have not only given Rosa Parks another look, but you've also given another look to Robert Corbett's sister, Recy Taylor, who you say helped spark the civil rights movement all the way back in the 1940s. That is Danielle McGuire. She's author of the new book, At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement. We also spoke with Robert Corbett. He's the brother of Recy Taylor, who was raped back in the 1940s and helped motivate the beginnings of the civil rights movement. Thanks so much to both of you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
It's just a classic tale of the empowerment of women becomes also the empowerment of men. And then together, the sort of African-American identity begins to be formed.
Yeah, one of the wonderful things about this book is the huge number of people you've never heard of before who played such an incredible role in sparking the civil rights movement and have been largely forgotten. But to hear their tales and the kind of people that they were and the kind of courage it took to do what they did is a powerful thing.
It's also, you know, important to note that the repression of women also constituted an enslavement of men in that they were unable to protect their own families.
It's absolutely true.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.